Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Mujan Sohi. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you all. And this is a question for you, Mujan, but everybody in the audience should have an answer for this too. So how do you define reliability?
This is a great question. I love it. Just for listeners, we had zero preparation for this. And by we, I mean me. So, are we going with the official, like, technical definition, or is it from who's the audience? Like, what are we, or do we care?
I just asked you, that's all. I didn't put any constraints on this whatsoever.
Okay, so we're leaving it open-ended. Okay, so the official definition of reliability is probability of something happening at a given time under specific conditions. I think that's what in a technical discussion, one should try and consider. And I think if you're in a leadership position, ideally, you know this, but if not, I think it's, you should think about it in terms of what does it mean for your product? And in some cases, for example, it could mean the thing that could, that if it happens, could cause downtime, for instance, and impact your availability. Or it could mean that it's going to result in warranty costs or customer dissatisfaction.
Oh, okay. You finally mentioned the customer. How's the customer define reliability?
Oh, good point. From the customer's perspective, it could be, I guess it's a very simple form. It could be an interruption of use, interruption of service. So whatever the product is, if it's not performing the way that you would expect it to, it could be a reliability problem. That's how I would put it.
Okay. Well, you just got off of a vacation and another trip. You've been on airplanes, and airlines define reliability as that the plane departs and arrives within like plus or minus 20 minutes or some slush fund around it that has nothing to do with that technical definition that you mentioned to start with. But that's similar to what you just said. You know, it's a disruption in service. So if your plane is delayed an hour, was unexpected. It's inconvenient at best, and it's you miss your flight or cruise or whatever after that, and then it's a disaster. But In the product reliability world, and even in factory world, it's the customer that's the final arbiter of it. And we can set all kinds of conditions and specifications and everything else, but the customer says, no, I don't like it. It's not doing what I want it to do or what I think it should do.
And
here's one more version of that is, how do the rest of the engineering world, not reliability engineers per se, but people in electrical, mechanical, and software and so on, how do they think of reliability? How would they define it?
I would hope that they would, now that we've talked about the customer, I would hope that they would also kind of start with that to define reliability, because really what it comes down to is the requirement that you expect in usage, right? So if the product is in service, is in the customer's hands, what do you expect them to be doing with this? Mm-hmm. And then therefore, how do you define what the requirement for your product is? And then from there, how do you define what the function of the product is at like a high level, and then obviously going down to the different levels, and then based on that, you determine what your what could prevent it from being able to perform those functions. So, really, it should be starting with the user because the user, when the conditions that you expect the user to be utilizing the product in should be defining like essentially your design boundaries.
Yeah. In some markets, it's pretty cloudy as to what and how and when a customer is going to use a product in a certain way. And some, like I worked with a component manufacturer, they made inductors, wire wrapped inductors, and they sold to the space station. They knew their products were used on satellites. That was used in under the hood of a vehicle. It was used in lots of consumer electronics. It's being used in toasters. I mean, every inductor they make, they have only a vague idea of what it's going to be put in. Mm-hmm. And so it just needs to take current and voltage and do its inductance magic. And they kind of hope for the best after that. But I also found that they said, well, we have internal specifications, so we test it to that. And that makes it reliable. You know, mm-hmm. Like, and mostly it's because they were really blind, is because very, 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 very few of the millions and billions of inductors they made ever got returned to them saying, hey, it failed.
Yes, as far as they know, maybe it was reliable. that's the key thing. Is that that's often what happens, is unless they get information back, they don't necessarily have the right information to be able to update their specifications and their requirements, and therefore it could mean that they just don't know how it's going to be used.
Yeah. Oh. I worked with the product. It was at HP. It was one of the divisions that made a point of sale card reader, a little credit card reader thing that you'd see at a grocery store checkout or convenience store, stuff like that. And their system had a security feature on it that if you tried to open the case or even probe the case electromechanically, it would discharge some high-powered capacitors and destroy the memory in the CPU. Literally destroy it. Smoke would be coming out of this thing. It just self-destructs, sort of like Get Smart show, kind of thing. Sorry, another reference to it from our previous conversation to a 60s sitcom, which we probably didn't know much about.
Unfortunately, no.
He had a shoe phone. That's all you need to know about that show.
Okay.
But the idea was is that in some industries and some businesses, we really don't know. And so we use internal specifications or regulatory stuff and say, if it meets that, it's good, which is dangerous. That and on occasion, that's why I got called into him, is like, well, we met the specs. He says, yeah, but the customer is the judge of the reliability at the end of the day. And
to be fair, I think, sorry to interrupt, I would challenge the assumption that we don't know. I think it's on, partially, it's on the person that's providing the product to find out what the customer wants. Right. Like they should be asking questions to understand, especially if it's something like a conductor, for example, where someone is probably buying hundreds of thousands of these things, then that it's your job to have, your account manager or your applications engineer or whoever is working on your customer facing side to ask lots of questions, to be like, okay, like, what is your application? How are you going to use this? Like, if they're not buying many of them, then it's probably not impacting your product portfolio too much anyways. But if they are buying many of them, then it is absolutely your job to know what is the application and, then help your customer, obviously, to make sure that does it meet their requirements or not, to figure that out.
Yeah. And there's this other force at play, is that HP didn't want to buy the most expensive inductors with an advisor telling us, is it going to work in our circuit boards or not? We wanted a lot of them cheap. And so this company then didn't have account managers. They didn't have, if you want an inductor, we can make a lot of them. And but they tended to spend most of their time on the manufacturing line to make sure that their manufacturing process wasn't inducing failures, which they had found internally was the major reason that their products would fail. Mm. If you nick the lacquer on these really thin wires, and it can create a short in the winding, and that would cause it to fail. And in their own internal testing and due diligence and stuff, they found that that was get the manufacturing right and everything else pretty much just works. Mm-hmm. But the manufacturers have a view of what reliability is, and sometimes they're blind exactly how it's used. And I agree with you. For critical stuff and for more important things, and I'm thinking even power supplies and more module type things that companies are trusting to work for you, then you got to spend way more time understanding your customer and use applications and so on in order to not let, in order to keep that business, to keep that channel. Because if I'm buying power supplies and they don't work, I'll go find somebody else. I'll go make one. Yes,
exactly. Exactly. I would argue that even, I mean, criticality can be defined in different ways depending on the perspective. So of course, like if there's something that is safety critical, yes, absolutely. But even if it's not, you know, like if your business depends on it, if your success of your business depends on it, then you're absolutely responsible for finding out, you know, how is this being used? How can I make sure that the customer is satisfied? And, you know, does this meet their what they need? And can I make any changes and that could make it better for them? And how do I help them? And yeah. I think if you're not doing that, then you're missing out a lot on what could be very good opportunities.
My overall thought here is, you know, I asked you what it was, and I asked my grad students in the class I teach through Maryland, you know, so define reliability. Mm-hmm. And I think every single one of all the students I ever asked that question to, except one, said it's a function over some duration in a defined environment. It doesn't fail.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay, well, who defines failure? Yeah. And that throws them for a loop.
You know?
Yeah, well, does it meet spec, right? We tried that in the 80s. That didn't work then. You know, it's meet spec. That's not quality. That's not good enough. And so the idea, my main point here of asking you this is that I made the assumption that you would answer it with the four-part definition that we use as reliability engineers. But if you go ask two or three managers and a couple of engineers that you work with, they would not use that as the default. They almost always will say, well, it just works. You can trust it. You can count on it. When you get in your car, it'll start. You can trust it. And the number one definition in various, like Webster's Dictionary and Merriam-Webster now, I think they joined forces, and Oxford English Dictionary, their first definition is trustworthy. All right. So you're very reliable, Mujan. You showed up in time to hit record today. So I can count on that. I wish I was so reliable.
You are. I think you are.
But that's the idea, is that's how most people, consumers included, is when they're not saying, oh, you failed on functional requirement number 16 in your manual. No, they said it doesn't work. I can't count on it. My phone doesn't work. I can't make a phone call. You know, and they don't care why or how. It's just, it doesn't work. And so I can't trust it. And once you cross that line, that really drives into that customer satisfaction part. But when I ask engineers this outside of the reliability field, it's almost always that trust definition, which is how do you quantify that? It's the engineers will tell me, says, well, it just needs to work. And well, how are you defining that? Or it shouldn't fail, right? Who's defining failure?
And when should it not fail? And, you know, under what conditions? And exactly. Yeah.
So it varies a whole lot. And then I find some of the more unethical managers I worked with is the definition of reliability in whatever form it is changes to meet their convenience so that they ship on time and get their promotion.
That's terrible.
True story though.
It does happen.
But it's the idea is that we get very comfortable with our four-part definition of it. But I don't know how many different product requirement documents I've taken a look at and been asked to help their team improve their reliability program or their effort, their product's eventual reliability performance, that, well, it's a 2-year warranty, so our reliability has to be 2 years. Really? How long do your customers use this thing? Oh, they'll use it for 5 years. Okay. Should it not fail between 2 and 5 years? Well, we don't care about that because it's warranty. Then why do you even say it should last for 5 years? Well, that's what our customers want. And it starts to get into one of these, you know, who's on first conversations.
Circular argument, yeah.
And then that's on one page is the warranty duration. Yeah. And then on another page is the requirements. Here's the critical things that if these fail, that's bad kind of thing. And then on another page is, oh, they're going to use it handheld indoors, outdoors, worldwide. Okay. And yet another page is, well, here's what it's supposed to do. Here's all the functions. And that's the bulk of the document. But it's scattered all over the place. Very few documents actually say, oh, it's a phone. It should make and, you know, be able to receive and transmit digital and voice communications handheld worldwide. Very few ever talk about that.
Yeah. And, you know, in my experience, I've been shocked about how many times, even an automotive that you would think by now, you know, would be.
It's only been 100 years.
Well-oiled machine, pun intended. That how many times, you know, a supplier, we would tell the supplier, be like, okay, like we need this. And they'd be like, okay, well, here's our proposal. You didn't ask us any questions. Like you're okay with that? Like, how do you know that this is going to work? You know, like it's. And we had to train. I trained, you know, and my team trained our supplier engineers and, you know, design engineers to be like, don't just accept like what they're proposing. They have to understand what we're trying to use it for. Mm-hmm. And of course it wasn't entirely, you know, blind like that. Of course they narrowed it down, but there's still like lots of specifications and requirements and, you know, just like how they define the life of their product that could depend on the usage that they just didn't inquire about. And we had to train our teams to make sure that they communicate that to the suppliers. And so it's like a more informed, you know, decision and conversation. Mm-hmm. It's very, I think in my experience is very common that the questions to your point are not necessarily asked about, well, you know, what is the definition of reliability? And then it will be like exactly like you described. One page is like, well, the vehicle is going to be, you know, is you know, the useful life. Oh man, this term useful life, I feel like I have a relationship with the term useful life that you do with MTBF, I think. Maybe that's a bit extreme. Maybe it's not that bad. But you know, it's one of those things that I feel like is so confused. Like it confuses everybody. Like it doesn't have a clear definition and no one tries to define it very clearly. So then they're just like, well, the useful life is 150,000 miles. And then they say, well, and then the reliability target is listed somewhere else. And then the, you know, there's the 10-year mark that's listed somewhere else. And then there's, you know, like exactly mm-hmm. like I said, like different pages describe different requirements. And if I was a supplier, I would hope that, you know, I would be asking the questions of like, okay, well, what does this mean for this product that I'm giving you? Like, what are you going to be using it in?
Is this going to be replaced as a module every 5,000 miles? Or is this going to survive 150,000 miles in off-road heavy, you know, race car driving? What are you doing with this thing?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, I get that. Useful life is, I think it's vague. I blame marketing for that.
You always blame marketing.
Of course.
It's always like, is that the marketing?
Procurement's my second favorite, you know. But, but the idea is that, well, how long do we expect customers to use this before they're going to trade it in or abandon it or retire it or it's consumed all of its consumables and it's not worth repairing anymore? Whatever is a lot of companies use that. How long we expect a customer to use it. And there's outliers, yet why isn't that a distribution? Mm-hmm. Why isn't that only 2% are going to go 150,000 miles on it? You know, or maybe 80% are going to go 150,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. So that makes a huge difference as to how I would design a product. Mm-hmm. And if you go ask three mechanical engineers saying you're designing this wheel assembly and suspension to go 150,000 miles, what does that mean to you? Well, almost nobody will go that long with it before it's retired or it's not useful anymore. So mm-hmm. I don't care. I'm designing for the 50,000 miles because that's where most people are. And the next person will say, oh, well, we have to make it gold plated and the strongest ever. And we have no failures whatsoever for 150,000 miles and so on. It leaves it vague when you don't have 98% have to survive 150,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here's the criteria for failure and so on. And that's a big part of what we do. And it's like what you used an example of working with your supply team, the engineering team, to work with suppliers to better mm-hmm. define what it is we want from a reliability point of view. And the hard part is that most of us are so ingrained with this four-part piece of it, we don't consciously remember that everybody else is going, oh, it just needs to work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And an interruption in service is really what the customer may ultimately care about.
Yeah, or they don't like the color you picked. You know, you never know. All right. Well, to be fair to you, Jen, for being a good sport on this one, you can ask some random question when we hit record the next time, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay. I will prepare a list of questions that to not provide any notice to you for.
There you go. All right. We'll cool. do it. I look forward to it. Sounds all right. Fun. But if, you know, it's not just open to you, as Jen, it's open to all of our listeners too. If they've got a question, they'd like to pop on us and say, hey, what do you think? And if you send along maybe in a separate message or in a time delayed message or something like that, what's your answer? Maybe wait until we record it and then tell us what you thought the answer should be. That'd be a way to participate in the conversation. But whatever, if you've got a random question or something that you're facing that you want some help with, or if you've seen challenges because the rest of the world just doesn't understand how to define reliability, let us know. Head over to sendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Majan and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Unless Majan's off scuba diving someplace or snorkeling or whatever.
Fred and I are generally very reliable people. We will definitely get back to you.
But we'll get back to you. It might be a little delayed sometimes, but most of the time we get back to you pretty quick.
Yes.
So we do look forward to your questions too. So, and I look forward to the question, and don't be too, well, it doesn't really much matter. You know that we can talk about anything. So
yes.
Any question will be good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a PG show though. You got it. Keep that in mind.
Yes. Yes, yes, absolutely.
All right, cool. Well, thanks so much, Majan, for being a sport with that one and falling into my trap of four part.
Yes.
I knew
no
the
problem.
Answer.
Yeah. I'm happy to oblige.
All right, cool. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.